Hello, everybody, ladies and germs. Welcome to this episode of the Flats and Shanks podcast, brought to you not live from Bath and Cardiff, respectfully. I am David Llewellyn Flanklin, and he is...
I am Favid Datman.
I don't know if Flanklin was an accident, but it actually worked out really well for me.
I'd rather the F than a W, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, how are you? What have you been up
to? I'll level with you, fella. I'm ready for it to end now. I'm ready for COVID to do what we thought was going to happen a few months ago, which is as soon as the temperature goes up, it burns the virus off and we can all just go back to normal as of Tuesday. I'm ready for that now.
Yeah. So am I. Although I've had a couple of glimmers of hope. I've been to heaven and back a couple of times.
Go on.
Well, you can now play a two ball in golf here in Wales, which has been great.
So you've got to stay 2 metres away from bubs?
Yeah. That's fine, mate. I'm more like 100 yards away from bubs, over the top of him. And we're allowed to socialise again, 2 metres apart, same every time, with one of the family.
Yes. Are we allowed to do that in England or not?
Yeah, I think you're allowed to go up to 6, mate. Have you not been following the news?
Yeah, I didn't know you were allowed to bring kids and stuff, though. Because, like, if I bring my kids somewhere, they're not going to socially distance. They're going to be uppercutting people.
Yeah, they're going to be...
Kids can't socially distance, can they? Can yours?
They're going to be snatching, squatting. Yeah, we tried. You know, I mean, we're in the garden. We didn't go inside. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just nice having some company. It's been lonely, mate. It's been lonely. Not as lonely as the Snowpiercer. Wilfred.
Well, have you seen that film? I got 15 minutes into episode one and had to go.
Hold on.
To leave it.
Snowpiercer is a film.
Oh, no. Snowpiercer on Netflix?
Nope. It might be on Netflix. I watched it on Sky. It's a film. I had to Google sort of like top films or best series to watch, and I'd seen nearly all a series. I don't want another subtitled one for a while. Foreign films,
yeah,
I call them. Because I've got massive collection
foreign
of them.
Ones.
I've got a massive collection of them.
Tommy Farage, foreign muck.
But yeah, I mean, Money Heist was amazing. All right, you have to get into it.
Was it?
Brilliant. Yeah, so clever, so good. But you don't get to watch it. I mean, it's great because you concentrate, but you don't get to view what's going around because you're too busy reading the subtitles. So
I see, subtitles bring me right in.
They do, and me as well, and you're captivated by it. But it's sometimes nice to see a full picture, you know, so you can have a look what's going on in the background. You can look for nip slip, whatever you want. But
I started Snowpiercer the other night and had to go upstairs. My daughter woke up, but then I did it while they're coming back down. But it was the train that is the survivors of the frozen apocalypse, whatever it is, one.
Yeah, it's a film.
All right, it's a film then. All right.
Maybe you watched maybe it's a series, but I watched the film. A Weinstein production, actually. Won't talk about that. But it was, I had to Google, right, sort of best films to watch before you die, because you never know, do you?
Yeah.
And that was on quite a few websites.
Oh, really?
Rotten Tomatoes had sort of rated it circa 90%.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And I...
Did you really like it?
I bloody had a go at it. I was intrigued, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was amazing. Chris Evans, he's the main actor. He stars in it. Jamie Bell's in there as well, who's brilliant. John Hurt. There's a few. Ed Harris. Who's always good in everything he does.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Apollo 13, I loved him in. But, yeah, it's different.
Okay, I'll finish that off. I'm also going to watch, it's quite a novel concept, isn't it? But I'm also going to watch Once Upon a Time in the West, which I haven't seen criminally, but Max Lahiff, the Bristol prop and best rig in Rugger, he... does film club every now and again, or once a week or so, on his Instagram stories, and they're very often good recoms, and that is one that looks like my cup of Earl Grey.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen it yet, so I'm in.
I'm gonna also watch, I've seen it before, Memento. This was 2000 this film was made. Guy Pearce.
The guy from Neighbours, isn't it?
Yeah, that's him, Guy Pearce. But again, it's on all of the films to watch before you get 6 feet under.
So, it's flipping clever. Mm, it's flipping clever.
It's about short-term memory trying to find the killer of his wife. So
yeah,
I'm going to just crack into old films because I've basically seen everything that's worth seeing. And I put on social media yesterday, any good series worth recommending, and not the obvious ones, and they just come back with the obvious ones. Seen them all.
Yeah, it's like, have you seen Breaking Bad? Yeah. It's like, bro.
Try 24. Game of Thrones.
Come on, bro. Yeah. Mm. Come on.
Yeah.
So give me so Wisting has been quite good, quite enjoyed that, and apparently Border Town, which I recommended to you, it's subtitled, but I quite like that. The reason I like subtitles is because you can't sit on your phone, you can't double screen, so it forces you to not do that, but you're good at that, aren't you? You put your phone away at night, which I don't do.
It goes on silent mode, mate, night mode, or whatever it is.
You're good, you.
And you could have a little check now and again, but otherwise it will just absorb you, won't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But I had some friends around, right, on Tuesday. And
is that what you cooked all that meat for?
Yeah.
Holy crap, that looked unbelievable. Well done.
It was a cap of rump, which is also called something else.
Picanha.
Picanha, that's it. It's the top of a sirloin, basically. And I just cut it in steaks, marinated it, and then I sealed it on the gas barbie. I got a nice Napoleon there. And then I slow cooked it with some ribs on the Traeger. After, so I didn't reverse seal it like I thought I was going to do. I did it the old-fashioned way. That's me in a nutshell. And it was brilliant, mate. So tender.
It was excellent.
Mm. It was really nice. Really well done. Nice.
Yeah, you inspired me because I'm doing a rump cap tonight now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
How did you do your ribs? You do the 3-2-1 ribs?
No, I did it the way you said.
Didn't I say 3-2-1? 3 hours, 2 hours, 1 hour.
Oh, I just did 3 hours. Maybe it should have been another hour.
Or double that. How were they?
Okay, I think they could have been more tender.
Yeah, that's probably took them off after 3 hours.
Yeah, I thought that's what you said in the text to me.
No, three hours on the grill, 2 hours bone up in some meat, bone up, meat down.
And then an hour to finish.
In tin foil with a bit of butter and brown sugar and apple juice, if you've got any, or orange juice or whatever, or some syrup.
I did all that.
That's 3 hours on its own, two hours in that foil, and then 1 hour turned back
round. See, that's where it's gone wrong, because you said 3 hours on the Traeger, and then I just assumed then it's 3 hours on the Traeger. I just assumed 2 hours wrapped up, bones up, and 1 hour down. That's where I've gone wrong.
Oh.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, 6 hours in the Traeger.
Yeah.
And you can do, I've never done it, but you can, some people do it, you could do like 6-8 racks in there. And it is it's a bit of admin on 3 hours when you have to wrap everything, but not that bad if you just lay a load of sheets of foil out on a table and you could just do ribs for days.
How many racks?
You could do loads, fella. Uh-huh. I've seen someone do eight.
Eight racks, wow.
Rack each, yeah, but if you've got a load of lads coming around, you do a rack each easy.
Do you love racks?
I love racks. Mm. I'm a rack guy.
Mm.
I'm a rack guy. Have you read about, I'm doing my picanha on the Jotisserie tonight.
Yeah, are your kids going to marinate it with a little...
I'll let you know if I balls it up.
With a little brush.
No, there's only salt goes on these. I'm not going to put anything else on it. So, have you read the Sam Burgess interview?
I have.
Good, eh?
Yes, it was. Doesn't get on with the explosive. Fords. The Burgesses and the Fords.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean... It's one of them things, boy, where you do need the other side of it, really, for it to be fair. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to get that. I mean, there's just nothing in it for George or Mike Ford to... I mean, what's the incentive for either of those two to go on a podcast?
Yeah.
Or do an interview with
Stuart Lancaster is the one, mate, to cast a view over it, because he's probably not going to be biased towards... either, you'd think. But I agree, it was brutally honest, which is great, which you hardly see in this day and age, do you? And
nope,
you know,
great.
He didn't mince his words, properly called out Mike Ford and George.
Called him a snake.
Yeah. with ulterior motive of wanting to coach England. So, yeah, I mean, I love those types of interviews because they are so frank and they're straight to the point. And,
yeah,
you know, he's not talking around things. He's just getting straight in and name dropping as well.
Yeah, so, doesn't muck about.
No. And you've got more, I've got more respect for a guy like that.
Hey?
I've got more respect for a guy like that. It just says what he feels, how it is, and actually names people.
And also, it's a bit like, he's not like Michael Jordan, obviously, but he is like top of the food chain in rugby league, Sam Burgess.
Yeah.
So he's hot property, now he's retired, whatever, and he was the man as a player. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like he can just say what he thinks without the fear of it kind of damaging his second career or damaging his reputation or people thinking, oh, I don't want to touch him now.
Yep.
So it's like Michael Jordan could say what he wanted within reason. He could say that, you know, Scottie Pippen was overrated and never liked him and he was a coward. I mean, he wouldn't say that. But if he said it, what you don't see is people dropping Michael Jordan. You know, you see the other. You see people dropping, taking his word for it. So I think Sam Burgess is in a similar position in rugby terms, in rugby league terms, not union, league terms, because he can say what he wants and he's still the man.
But you can see where the confusion comes in as well when he's talking about the positions that he's playing in. And Bath wanted him to play in six because they had Jonathan Joseph and Carl Eastman and that partnership was working. And it worked towards the way that Bath wanted to play as well. So he'd sort of fit in at a 6/12, Roman 12. So that's muddy as it is. You know, you can't just be a Roma, really. You can if you're a great winger, like a Siviatu or a Shane Williams, where you've just got, you know, an open book, really, and you can do what you want. But being a Roman 6 and a 12 sort of combined just doesn't work. You need clear sort of objectives of what you want to get out of positions. So you can see that. You can see why Bath wanted to play him six, and you can also see why England wanted to use him in the midfield. But
yeah,
that is the problem right there, isn't it? You know, you come over as one player, as one position, that's it. You don't, especially mixing between backs and forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually working at Bath Rugby after I'd retired when Sam Burgess was signed, when the whole thing went through. So I remember the chairman of the club saying, come and have a look in here. And he's on his laptop looking at, you know, he's watching sort of Sparkly Eye Boy or whatever it was, or highlights. And he's like, we're getting him. And I was like, awesome, man. Like, I like rugby league. I'm not an expert, but I love it. And I know Sam Burgess is. And I'm like, right, this is going to be awesome. And I remember someone saying to me, just like in a management meeting, not the chairman, just saying, what position will he play? And I said, well, he's got to play in the back row. It's the only place he can play. Well, no, he's too quick. He can do the centre. I was like, no way. Look what Kyle does.
Yeah.
And then look, there's no way he could do what Kyle does. And Kyle's like one of the most underrated players in the Prem, I think. He's just a class player. And,
injured a lot, though. That's a problem.
Yeah, he does get hurt a lot. But when he was at Bath, he was just absolute class.
Yep.
And a good fellow as well, which I like. But there's no way. And what you want Sam Burgess banging and clanging in traffic. That's what you want. But yeah, I remember being there when it became apparent that England wanted him as a centre and Bath didn't. And I must say, Bath, I think, were correct not to put him, to want him as a back row. And Sam Burgess says the same thing. But if someone picks you at centre for a World Cup, you're going to go and play, mate. You know, it's like, that's the way it goes. But he did absolutely fine at centre. He only played 5 tests. He did absolutely fine, didn't he? But, you know, you could see where it would get murky.
Yeah.
And then you've got a club coach, you know, whose son's on the bench for someone who's never played before. And it's like, well, I get that. But I can get why that would irk you, because but also, you know, Ollie Devoto was effectively jettisoned when Sam Burgess arrived. He was just jettisoned. And then he went on to Chiefs and has done brilliantly well. And he was not the name, and Sam Burgess was very high profile. We were all very excited, but Devoto was a much more capable centre because he'd done it so much more.
Yeah.
But he was just binned. Carl Ferns effectively binned from the back row from memory. If my memory's wrong, correct me. Carl Ferns was an unbelievably productive, dominant player for Bath when he played.
Good singer as well.
And just like, sorry?
Good singer as well.
Good singer, but he was effectively deleted. And it was like, well, I kind of get that, but...
Would we be having this conversation if England had won that game? You know, he can't sort of fathom how England lost that game. And I suppose if you look at the game as a whole, you know, Wales come back into it, but, you know, most of possession and territory really was with England. But, you know, if England won, you know, he'd still be playing rugby union. I don't think he would have gone back to rugby league because everything was rosy. I mean, he did his job on the field. Yeah, he got exposed once at the end of the first half. But, you know, he did his job. As he comes off the field, England are winning by 7-10 points, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, Tommy, I think you might be right. And it's just, he's very, very similar to Andy Farrell, wasn't he? In that Andy Farrell was more of a sort of a baller, I guess, rather than a specimen. But he was a big, powerful bloke. And they didn't quite, he started, played a bit of six. Was he a back row? Was he a centre? And it's like, well, look at the best 12s. Could Sam Burgess do what they do? Maybe in time. But is he ever going to have the speed and agility? Maybe not. But then you look at, you know, stick him in the back row, and it six is the obvious place. And, you know, you and I said that from the start, six or eight probably. But actually, although he's a beast in rugby league, he wasn't actually a beast in union because it's such a big man's game. It's a giant's game. I wonder if he would have had that impact. My guess is that he probably would have done very well at six because...
But it would have taken time. That's the problem.
Yeah. And his mindset was such that he was very keen to be dominant, so he would have found ways to nail people.
But it's also
and carry well and
how much time he's given and how much clubs, unions want to invest in him until he sort of gets it. Because I always remember Yeston Harris when he came over and, you know, they tried to start him at 10. You know, that, I mean, it was too technical, I think, a position for someone like Yeston to come over and just adapt to straight away. You know, rugby is a sport where, you know, you have to play the game from a young age, really, to get to know what your roles are, where you're positioning tactically. They found a position with 12 of them with him eventually, but, you know, just as he's sort of settling in, he leaves and goes back to league. So it's how much time as well Bath and England were willing to invest in until he gets it, because it's, I'd say it's far more technical. Back row,
a ton of money for him.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, for 3 years, they were keen to invest a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but I'm pretty confident he was the top earner at the club or close to it. I think the whole he came for the money thing was balls. I mean, I read from multiple sources and newspapers and whatever.
Hold
that
he
took
on,
a pay
you think
cut.
It's balls? He's come for the money.
He took a pay cut to come to Union. He paid less money to come. So he was on less money at Bath than he was on at South Sydney Rabbitohs, is what I read in numerous things. And I even, quote me on this, I remember Sam Burgess confirming that in an article once. Could be wrong. Of course, you start playing for England, you get tons of money, and I'm sure he earned a lot more in that year than he would have done at Rabbitohs, because five tests for England is well over 100,000 quid. But, and he went to a World Cup and all that, but, you know, it's... He did not come for a massive pay rise, is the thing. And I think he might have gone back for one. Good on him. But often your stock grows when you're away. But I think I think that wasn't the thing. I think he wanted to come over and be a rock star in union and play at the World Cup, and nearly worked. And all this toing and froing is, well, it's not toing, it's just not toing and froing, it's just toing. It's all very unedifying, but it's great to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. A little bit of news as well. James Hook has officially retired now. We knew he was going to retire at the end of the season, and it's a shame, isn't it? It's like Parise, you know, didn't really get his last send off. We're going to see Parise play off the bench for Italy in the Six Nations if he's on this year. Probably not are we?
Probably, I reckon.
James William Hook has signed off. Great player, great bloke. He wants to be a traffic cop.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether he's actually going to do it, but, you know, whenever he was asked what he's going to do after rugby, or if he wasn't a rugby player, he quite liked the idea of being a traffic cop.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. James Hook, what a player. I mean, I put on Twitter earlier, someone said, I tweeted about him, and someone said, such an underrated player. I was like, mate, underrated. He's got 81 caps and he's a British and Irish Lion. Like, I wish I was that underrated, mate. And then someone said he could have had 130 caps, and I agree with that. Like,
I don't think he's underrated, because we saw and we've seen how great he was. You know, you look at that 2008 England v Wales game, where, you know, he has such a fantastic game. Some of the games we've seen him with, the Ospreys, Gloucester, the lot. But I don't think you saw the full potential of him, is what I would say. Because he was so good.
Many caps.
They did get many caps, but in a lot of different positions. Mm. 12, 13, 15, 10. You know, he was naturally going to take over from Stephen Jones as the next 10. And I think Wales probably should have stuck a little bit harder with him and trying to convert him. Not convert him, but give him more experience. But they chopped and changed him round. And I think, you know, it was detrimental to him starting games, really, because he became a bit of a jack-of-all-trades. You know, he'd be on the bench because he's so versatile with so much cover. But when I look back at some of the great games he's played, they've all been at 10.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah.
That's interesting. And he was just, like, beautiful to watch. Yeah. Nightmare to play against. I only played against him a couple of times, but nightmare because he just... It's almost like, he just had everything.
Yeah.
So, but it's almost like with Shane Williams, he gets the ball, or Jason Robinson, everyone bricks it and they're on high alert. But James Hook will get the ball in positions where there is no real threat. And he had the passing game, the kicking game, the pace, the footwork, the confidence. It was like he would just embarrass you. He was one of those players that embarrassed you on telly.
He's not a massive bloke, right? He's incredibly chiseled and muscular, but such a good handoff. You know, like, you look at some of the boys you've played with and watch, like, you know, Leon Lloyd had a great handoff. Dan Carter's got a great handoff. James Hook is up there. Such a skill. You know, you think it's easy to hand people off, but there is an actual proper skill to it about, you know, being able to use their momentum as you push them away to sort of edge away as well. You know, it's not just about how strong you are. It's huge technique, and he had a great one. He had a great shotgun.
I got handed off by Xavier Rush once.
See,
that was bad.
He's not massive.
I kept out of his jersey, luckily.
I wouldn't say he's got a massive. He's like the forearm carry, and he liked to bowl people over.
It was a punch. I'm sure it was a punch. And then when Craig Quinnell came to Sarries, he handed someone off, and as he handed them off, he closed his fist and just chinned them as he was running. It was Jamie Joseph, the Japan coach, who played on tour in Japan. You were there.
Yeah.
And he got the ball, came off the bench, he carried, and as Jamie Joseph came to tackle, we handed him off and basically just punched him.
Would you rather be handed off or sat down?
Handed off.
Mm. Yeah.
So I got my angles wrong rather than I was dominated.
Or you went too high. That's the problem. That's why most people get handed off, because they don't sink and they're going for a grab tackle.
Yeah.
Mm.
Also in the news, well, not in the news, before we get to the other bit of news, this whole retiring during COVID thing is sad for a lot of players, and James Hook's one of them, but Francois Lowe is another one.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the greats, one of the greatest Bath players, but a great Springbok, World Cup winner, epic bloke, and he is just retiring in lockdown, so it's kind of over now, unless the season might get finished, hopefully. But, you know, you've got this... If the season does get finished, fine, but if this is... It's an odd way to go out, isn't it?
Yeah, you must, you know, sat at home feeling low. For yourself.
Also, Dan Carter's rejoined the Blues. Have you seen that?
Yeah. And, you know, especially when you're leaving and, you know, it's your last season, you know, you want to put in a special effort, don't you? You want to be remembered. And unfortunately, boys can't do that now. You know, boys can't have their final send-off. You know, hopefully once we get over this, you know, socially they'll be able to say goodbye. And, you know, maybe he could, you know, just do something with the fans. But it is a shame to see great players like that having to retire without having a proper farewell, is what I would say. Maybe we should just have a big party when this is over. Invite anyone.
Just a massive fight party.
Yeah, Dan Carter going to the Blues.
Blues, what are you saying?
Yeah. Great. Doesn't affect me either way. He's sort of filtered out now, really, hasn't he? He's been playing in Japan. Not really... hear too much for him, really. So it's, I think it's great for him going back. I read about it, going back home where his family live. So nice little way to finish his career. I don't even know how old he is, mate. I'm guessing about 45.
Yeah, he's 43 now. I know that when I got to sixth form, he'd left school 9 years before that.
Yeah,
I know that. So I think he's 43.
Yeah, he's doing manual labour. Another bit of news as well. Apparently they've arrested someone, or the cops suspect someone, who actually might have killed Madeleine McCann.
What?
This case will always be open, won't it? Because it's such a infamous...
Is that true? Have they really?
Apparently so. Apparently a German who was in the camper van in the Praia da Luz area in 2007. And he's actually in prison now for similar crimes. But
oh my gosh.
Apparently. Who knows, though? I mean,
pass me by, fella. I'm going to Google that when we get off the pod.
Yeah.
We've got a guest today, haven't we?
We sure do. He's a weirdo.
It's Jason Fox one week, it's Sir Chris Hoy the next, and it is Lord Tom Biggs this week. Now, okay, he doesn't have Olympic gold medals, and he hasn't been in the SAS, but Biggsy is one of the... You can't say someone's more unique than someone else. He's one of the most individual characters I know. Calls it like it is, lives life how he wants to live it. Absolute straight shooter, never heard the bloke tell a lie, never known him not pull someone up on something he doesn't think is right. And I always got on very well with Tom Biggs.
He's a weirdo,
so
mate.
Get him on and,
he's a bit weird. He's a bit weird. I've met him in Hong Kong a couple of times, and like I say hello to him at like the Hong Kong rugby club, and he go, oh, what are you up to now? I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go back hotel, have a quick shower and change. Oh, can I come? Yeah, it's fine. What are you doing now? I'm just going to meet a couple of boys for food. Oh, can I come? Yeah. All right, fine. Just wouldn't leave me, mate. Would not leave me alone. A bit embarrassing, really, but...
Yeah.
I felt sorry for him.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll ask him about his bodybuilding and about his love of Marvel cartoon characters and what he made of it all. Mm. Anyway, should we get into him?
Okay, let's give him a call.
Let's do that. All right, Biggsy, how are you, lad?
I'm good, pal. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for joining us. I know you know me intimately, but you know Shanks as well, don't you?
Yeah, hunted him down in Hong Kong once. Probably doesn't remember.
I do. Try to follow me around. It's a bit of a delay Hong here. Kong. Just to confirm, you're not on the other side of the world. You're, well, sort of are. You're in Hull, aren't you?
I am in Hull, yeah. I'm in Hull. Sorry it's not Sam Burgess or George Ford talking to you, by the way.
Well, we were just saying it's, you know, we like to get people on we think it'll be interesting. So we had Foxy from SAS Who Dares Wins. We had Sir Chris Hoy, and now we've got you. And all right, you haven't been in the Special Forces as far as we know, but I think you are an interesting bloke in your own right. So don't feel insecure, okay? Don't feel inadequate. We're happy to have you.
We want to peel you apart like an onion and just see what's under each level.
Delightful.
Yeah, you might make us cry. What have you, first of all, what are you doing, Biggsy? How's lockdown? And what's your current situation?
What are you benching?
Lockdown is good. It's been a little bit extended, my lockdown, because I was a little bit ill at the start of it. But keeping busy, looking after my housemates, and just enjoying a bit of free time, really. Training wise, got a little gym garage set up, so that is nice to have. Had a few people actually messaging wanting to come round, like it's fine to do it, which I found quite peculiar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do get quite a lot of random blokes, but they're just more keen for underwear rather than actual training. So yeah, quite bizarre that people are, you know, think it's okay.
So Biggsy, we'll talk about your bodybuilding in a minute. But first of all, just take us we don't want you to take us through your rugby career, but when you look back on your rugby career, what do you feel? What do you think? Do you think wonderful time, loved every minute? Did more than I ever thought or could have done this and didn't, or hated that club and loved this club. How do you feel when you look back at it?
I love my time at all the different clubs that I played for, but do look back with slight regret that I didn't achieve more and didn't reach what I wanted to reach. So it's a strange one, really. I never thought I'd get into being a professional rugby player when I was younger. So achieve more than what I ever thought I could, but then having been part of it and finishing, you know, I did want to achieve more.
I remember playing at Bath against you, and you played at Leeds, and I think you beat us at the Rec, I think. I can't remember where it was, but you had a really good game, and I remember after the game, the lads were like, we're like a senior player meeting on the Monday or whatever. And it's like, as soon as you lose to Leeds, you have like a panic meeting, like an honesty session. And it was like, we had that and it was like, yeah. And one of the boys, I can't remember who it was, Mudos or someone said, yeah, might be a good idea to try and sign that Biggs. And whoever the DOR was, I can't remember if it was Geach or whoever, was like, yeah, we tried once and we didn't get him. We're trying again. Was that right? Did Bath try to get you a couple of times?
Yeah, I think it was my first or second year at Bath. I can't remember which one. So, yeah, they had tried, but at that stage I was quite young. So it was actually Steve Meehan was in charge when I went down. And Bath weren't in a good place at the time because this was on the back of a few boys getting in trouble and things like that. So when I did meet them, it was Steve Meehan and Nick Blofeld, who I met.
Yeah.
And this was literally just after you could, you know, sign for clubs. And I was desperate to get down there. Obviously, the rugby that you boys played, the players that you had. But it was, for me, the first two clubs I was at was Leeds and Newcastle. So to come down to a huge club like Bath was, or is, it was pretty nerve-wracking, particularly with the players that you had there already. Because I'd never really been around that many sort of big name players. And also with Joe Maddock going out as well, it was, you know, added bit of pressure.
With Joe Maddock leaving the club, you mean? So you were kind of replacing Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's one of the names that people hardly ever mention, but I thought he was an amazing player.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And at the time, Bath thought that he was going to be staying. That was what I thought was going to happen. So, you know, it's obviously great for me that he wasn't there because it's less competition to get in the team.
Yeah, there's plenty of experience you've got from Newcastle, from Bath, Worcester. Who would be the one player that you would line up against come game day and you think, oh, no, I wish he wasn't playing?
I think Selassie Tagithakibau. I probably pronounced that slightly wrong. But
no, you've done it right. You've done it right.
So I just thought he was exceptional for London Irish. His speed, power, skills, if you went low on him, he'd offload. And yeah, he was, I think, one of the people who thought, oh God, don't really want to go against him. Because when you're on the wing, obviously a lot of the time, you don't really ever come up one-on-one with your opposite man.
No.
But yeah, I thought he was very good.
So shepherd him into touch. Is there a favourite try that you can remember? You're a try machine?
Wasp at Twickenham, hat trick, got to be.
That was a great day. That was a great day. Really enjoyed that. But no, my favourite try was actually for Leeds against Leicester. Because
you ran over Andy Goode.
I got kicked out of the team, and we had our 21s, whatever it was at the time, and we were on a real bad losing run, and hadn't played for a couple of months. And Phil was like, "Oh, we're going to start you." Actually, it might have been JC John Callard said we're going to start you at fullback this weekend against Leicester, which at the time is when Leicester were really good. It was my dad's birthday. And I scored a try. We won the game, and then we went and beaten for the rest of the season, won the Power Gen Cup, and stayed in the Premiership. So that is definitely my favourite try. More than anything, it being my dad's birthday, I think.
Oh, were you playing at Twickenham when you beat Bath?
Yeah.
When you beat us at Twickenham, I played in that. What a mate! Congratulations, yeah.
Yeah, so that was again. I didn't start at fullback. Bolt started at fullback.
Of course he did.
Got injured, and then I moved to fullback. So.
Standard. That's such standard Bolsh. I remember Stuart Hooper being mega that day. He was fantastic.
Yeah, he got his face really bashed in. Really bashed in. But a lot of time for Hoops. He was a fantastic captain. And at Leeds and at Bath as a leader, I thought he was superb.
Yeah, superb bloke. So when you look back on your time at Bath, you played under a couple of regimes, as did I. What did you, I mean, you arrived just after the drug scandal hit Bath, the cocaine scandal hit Bath, and or refusal to test, whatever you want to call it. And it's obviously an odd time to join a club. But what did you make of the various regimes there? Because Bath is a club that, yes, we won a trophy in 2008, but it's a club that has, in very, very crude terms, spent an awful lot of money and not won very much off the back of it. And of course, it's hard to win things. But what did you make of the various regimes there?
Well, the first one, Geach came in as, I think he was director of rugby, and Steve Meehan was head coach. And it was, I mean, it was not, it was an unprofessional setup, I would call it. So in terms of, you know, you're rocking around the Bath University to do a bit of training, then you're down to the rec to get some food, then you're down at Lambridge, it's wear what you want, we'll do a quick, you know, meeting, out you go. There's boys coming out with a few coffees, like, in the middle of training and stuff like that, which was, it obviously worked for the team because you'd been doing really well. And I think Geach was, like, the one who wanted to change that. He wanted more sort of, lads, we've got to be more professional. And the players they brought in and moving it, so they brought in Lewis Moody and Simon Taylor that year as well, and moved it to Farley House. They were like, we've got to be more professional because it might have been all right in the past, but Bruce Craig's taken over now and he's investing a lot of money to make this club successful. I think the biggest thing for me that year was working with Brad Davis. So,
oh yeah,
Brad was our defence coach, and I mean he was very hard on me. He was hard on a lot of guys, but a lot of time for Brad, and it was a shame when he left. I can't remember if he was there for 2 years, but it was a real shame when he left because he was brilliant for me and a lot of the boys as well.
Well, I got the impression, and this is one of those things, Bigsy, where you never quite know. And I was working at the club at the time, but not on the rugby side. As you know, I was on the commercial side. So you just don't hear loads of stuff from the rugby. You'll often hear about big signings on Twitter before you hear about it from the club. That's just the way it worked then. Not that joined up. But I remember Brad being a brilliant coach. And I've often said he's one of the best coaches I ever had. So it's funny you say his name. And a great bloke. He was hard on us, but geez, he was a good coach and knew his stuff. But then sort of Gary Gold, Mike Ford and those guys came in, and Brad seemed to, he never seemed to be alongside them. He always seemed to be separate, whether they kept him separate or he felt separate. And then he left and it all seemed messy and unfair. And what do you remember of Brad leaving Bath? Because I remember thinking it was a massive loss.
Yeah, I remember we had a meeting and Fordy led a defence meeting saying our defence wasn't good enough while Brad was next to him, which was strange. And no one really knew, like, so there was Toby Booth came in and Neil Hatley. And I think I couldn't remember at the time what, if Fordy was going to do the attack, Fordy wanted to do the defence, if Brad wanted to move on with what had gone on, Gary coming in. So I can't really remember, to be honest, what happened with Brad leaving. I can't remember what happened with Gary Gold leaving, to be honest. It's just sort of, as players, you get a meeting, so-and-so's leaving. That's usually it, move on.
Isn't it?
Don't really remember. I didn't hear anything about, well, I don't even know if Brad wanted to leave or whatever. So,
You get called in and say, lads, this has happened. So we'll all crack on with it. And anyway, training's at 10. That's literally what it's like, isn't it? You just have no, it's so true. And so as a player, were you at Bath when Sam Burgess arrived, or had you gone by then?
No, I'd gone by then, but I was there for the famous meeting where everyone at Bath Rugby gathered in the barn. Everyone's thinking, what's going on here? All the commercial staff have come over, you know, the chefs, cleaners, everyone involved and employed by Bath Rugby. And Fordy leads his PowerPoint presentation and goes, we're signing the best player in the world. We're going to build our club around him.
Messi's coming.
And
well, yeah.
I mean, I thought it was great because I was a big rugby league fan. I obviously know who Sam Burgess is because, you know, he was the best player in the world. A lot of boys weren't particularly happy about it, I would say. But Fordy was, you know, desperate to get him in and build everything to do with Bath around him. And obviously he came in and say what you want, but the boys got to the Premiership final that year. So
I was genuinely excited about him coming. I was properly excited.
No threat, that's why, mate. Sure. It was no threat. It wasn't a prop. It's fine. If they said, oh, we're going to turn Sam Burgess into a loose head, the best loose head ever.
Nope. I'd have been knifing people left, right and centre, boy.
You wouldn't have offered him any steak, that's for sure.
I'd be knifing him on WhatsApp to all the lads, mate.
Bigsy, you're a winger, right? There's an out-and-out winger. did you enjoy your time at the Sevens circuit as well? Because with the pace you've got, and you know, playing on the wing is all about scoring tries. Did you enjoy Sevens more than 15s, or do you still love sort of nostalgia concept of?
No, I definitely 15s. enjoyed the Sevens more. We did quite well in the. I did it for like a full year. We did pretty well, apart from it was the World Cup that year, which unfortunately Wales went on to win, but won't mention that again, which was disappointing.
Tal Serevi played, didn't he?
So the Sevens team that we had a real good group of guys, basically good coaches, and we had more or less the same squad for the full year. We had Dan Norton was playing then, and James Rodwell, who's still, I think those two are still playing. It was brilliant. I mean, the stuff that you get to go and experience was just out of this world. And we had Ollie Phillips was our captain, so he arranged some really good stuff, to be fair to him. Obviously, we hammered him at every opportunity.
Yeah, obviously.
Such a hairy bloke, mind, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he was even hairier then. So,
Benjamin
the Sevens was really good. And, just had that disappointment at the World Cup.
Where's your favourite country to tour with Sevens? Because you get to go all around the world, which is amazing.
I really liked... We were in San Diego for the America leg. It was before Vegas. So I really liked San Diego.
The Wales vagina. Nice.
The Wales vagina. What was
that's from Anchorman.
Mate. Anchorman.
Oh, yeah.
come on,
yeah. It seems like quite a nice life, the Sevens life. Not one I've experienced. Now, what defines people who kind of don't play anymore is often to a lot of people is what they see on social media, because that's all anybody knows of you anymore. And you were always rigged up. You always had a good chassis. And questionable lids, but good chassis. And you've taken that to another level since retirement, haven't you? So tell us a little bit about your bodybuilding and why you're doing it, why you enjoy it, and where you want to go with it.
And do you own any T-shirts? Because I can't see any on your social
just
media.
No, just vests.
It was just... So when I retired, it was because of an ankle injury. So didn't realise how much you wanted to compete in something. And can't run, so that takes obviously a whole lot of sport out of it. And a few people were like, oh, why don't you do this, you know, bodybuilding, men's physique stuff? And always been into, like, you know, WWF wrestling, all the action heroes, stuff like that. So
Disney
was like, yeah, I'd be keen to give it a go, and spoke to a few people and just thought, like, it looks a lot of hard work, and do I really want to, you know, push myself to do it? And I think when I was playing, I did my, you know, some training qualifications, S&C and nutrition. And along the way, obviously, you meet various people. So I think the first person that I met that got me into doing a bit of weights was a guy called Matt Challoner, who plays for Doncaster now, but he was actually on my university course at Leeds. And he was a behemoth of a bloke then when we were, 18, 19. So he was like, right, you're skinny, whatever, I'm taking you to the gym, because you're a disgrace, basically. So
sounds like grooming to me, but carry on.
I'd go and do we'd do some weights with him. He was in, like, you know, proper Leeds Academy and all the rest of it. And then we had don't know if you've ever come across to either Adam Carey, the nutritionist.
Yeah, I know. Okay. He used to be the England nutritionist.
Oh, right, yeah. So he came into Leeds. And back then, I knew nothing about nutrition, but quite liked, you know, the stuff he said. He loved just putting in a swear word when he was speaking in front of rugby lads as well, which I always found quite amusing.
Love that.
Morning, you bastards.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. So gave me a little bit of, like, interest on nutrition that I wanted to continue with. So as I was going through playing, the sort of nutrition and fitness part was always quite important to me. More than anything, it's because I was competing against players that were better skill level than me. So I was trying to do everything I could to, you know, close that gap, basically, or be better than them. If I can be, you know, fitter and stronger than them, then, you know, that means they've got to catch up. So obviously had a lot of education around it in courses and just thought, yeah, I'm going to go for it. And did a couple of competitions. One went quite well, one didn't go so well.
What happened? Shit yourself.
It's... wasn't quite as bad as that. Do see some, I mean, some of the stuff you see going on in these, it is just ridiculous. You know, just boys, you know, people drinking bottles of vodka trying to dehydrate themselves and it's just absolutely, I mean, it is bizarre. So I know people's take on it is it's weird and it's bizarre, but I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed the process of doing it and finding out more about my training.
How tough is it, though? How tough is the training? Because, you know, people just think, you know, you give yourself an injection sort of every week. But
Shanks, there's more to Bigsy than just drugs, all right?
The boy said that. But no, obviously you're clean. You know, you're one of the only clean ones, I know. But the training, how much time does it take in the gym to build this physique, or do you airbrush yourself?
It's not so much it's definitely the diet makes the big difference.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's why it's
I
so hard.
Going wrong.
I mean, it's such an unhealthy thing to do because you're basically starving yourself for, you know, I only did it for, I think it was 6 weeks preparation.
What would your diet be then during that period?
So,
an example.
So you're trying to. It's pretty boring, to be honest.
No, go on.
Give us a day's worth. Then.
So first of all, you need to work out your TDEE, which is total daily energy expenditure.
Yeah, I know that.
Let's say mine might be, I don't know, 2,500 calories I need a day to maintain.
Yeah.
And typically, you'd probably look to lose. Say if you wanted to lose a pound of fat a week, so a pound of fat is 3,500 calories. So you need to be in a 500 calorie deficit every day. And you're going high protein to try and maintain the muscle.
Yeah.
And then closer to the competition, you're trying to do sort of a keto diet so that when you do put carbs back into your body, the glycogen's going to pull water into your muscles and make you look bigger.
Yeah, maybe the veins pop out in your arm a little bit.
So, it's pretty cool.
Did you get hangry? Did you get hangry on it? You know, that you become so hungry that everything is a nightmare around you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sleeping's a real problem. You don't sleep very well and your joints...
Really?
Your joints really hurt and stuff like that.
Oh, mate.
So, where it sends you... Like, I spoke to loads of people before I did it and they were like, look, just be careful because...
You might murder someone.
Mentally, it'll just like put you in a bad way, which
you're quite a dark geezer anyway, aren't you?
Yes,
like, you know, you don't you don't need dragging down any further, you'll be a killer.
So the worst times it's dark, and then after the last competition I did, because I just binged on so much food, really bad water retention, so basically the water just held in my body and my feet and hands swelled with water, so pins and needles, which was just made you feel awful. But you're still just.
I remember.
Can I just ask?
I remember you posting pictures. Go on.
When you're actually competing, when you're out on the stage, do you get to choose your own music and like how long?
Oh,
do you
there's,
have to...
there's no music in my one. It was literally. So I'm in the like the girly one, so the long shorts.
And that was
one of the. They were like, you shouldn't be competing this one. You should be competing in the next, you know, next one.
Okay.
But maybe next time.
Is that like a cyclist? You don't have the, you know, like we get into cycling, you don't have the full confidence to wear like bibs and cycling shorts. So you wear a normal pair of shorts.
What music do you think I should have if I do it again?
I reckon Creep by Radiohead.
Yeah, perfect.
What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here.
You're actually kind of at you're broken. You're almost like at your weakest when you look like you're at your strongest.
Yes.
It's kind of your
low
energy.
See, like,
it's so bizarre.
It's called death face. So your cheeks go into like a skull on your face. So it's really.
I remember looking at pictures of you. It was like, oh my god! I mean, your body was, your physique was unbelievable. Your face looked completely different. Just because we are joking about it, just to make sure, If Shanks and I thought or knew that Big Z was jabbing himself with Roy's, we wouldn't make jokes about it. We probably wouldn't have had him on because it would have been awkward. But I speak to Big Z privately and I know that he's not. He just eats the right stuff and lifts hard.
It's Jabbatan. Yeah, that's all.
Jabbatan. Is it melanin or melanonin or something people jab into themselves? Big Z, you're, you are a man in many ways, including age and sort of physique, but you are... a child in other ways too, in that you love Marvel comic book heroes and all that kind of stuff. And your gym at home has got like the Incredible Hulk or She-Ra in it or something, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've got Incredible Hulk on one side and Thor on the other side of my cage. Like a life-size standard.
Yeah. Motivation, is it? Or
yeah, why not?
It was just...
I saw Baywatch and I had a picture of CJ on the wall. When I was younger.
Nice. Mm. Nice. It was just stuff that I'd randomly collected over the years that was in the loft, so I just thought that'd be the best stuff to put up there. The best thing I've got in there actually is a signed picture from Rolf Harris.
I knew there was some darkness had come out.
Yeah. There he is. We found him. We peeled a layer back. We got him. I'm with you though on that. I've got a Stormtroopers outfit, so I'm into all that sort of stuff as well.
You're into all that, Rolf. You're into Rolf. Once Bigsy, I went on a mate of mine stag do, and we all groups of three had 150 quid each to spend on a car. So 50 quid a man, you'd buy the worst car you could. And I had 60 quid change or something from my 150 quid. Anyway, then we got to graffiti each other's cars to drive from Thames Ditton in London to Cardiff, and we all, you know, like cock piss partridge and that sort of stuff, and my mate had a white car and I just wrote in black "Free Rolf Harris" along the side. So it just been done. It was really bad. Someone followed us into a service station. Well, I probably went for my mate. That was brilliant. And then as he was, we use these cars. What I'm going to say is bad, but not that bad. He was basically, this bloke got out of his car, out of his big 4x4, was having a go at my mate Adam the stag, because you see what's written on your car? Adam's like, mate, it's a joke. Well, it ain't funny, yeah. And my mate Matt just drove in his 40 quid Volvo and smashed it into the back of Adam's car, smashed all the lights out, got out and went, lads, and just kept walking into the service station. This bloke didn't know what had happened. Anyway, there you go.
There we are. Well, anyway, Bigsy, we'll let you get back to whatever you're doing. Thank you for... What are you actually doing, apart from...
Still a bodybuilder? Are you still doing it?
Well, no, not at the moment. At the moment, just working my way through Netflix and movies. So
yeah, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all right.
Of course, everything... Well, nothing's going to go on this year, so there's not really much point.
Sorry, mate. We've completed Netflix and other certain hubs.
What's the favourite thing you've seen?
Afterlife made me cry and laugh in every episode.
I really enjoyed Homeland season 8. I don't know if you watch them. I thought it was brilliant. I'm trying to think what else. I've watched so many. I can't remember half the stuff I've watched.
Oh, Last Dance. You've seen Last Dance, Big Z?
Yeah, that's very good.
Mm. Oh, I read today that Tiger Woods is going to get his own Last Dance type documentary. They're going to do one on Tiger Woods. Presumably it'd be semi-pornographic, but
hopefully
I'd be keen to watch that.
Yeah, be great.
Hopefully, yeah. See some stuff in it. Hey, cheers, Bigsy. Just keep going. Keep eating right, yeah? Eat
cheers,
clean, train dirty, yeah?
Lovely to see you. Speak to you.
Well done, Bigsy. Cheers then, fella. Bye, mate. Bye.
Lovely that. Always say that after chatting to a guest. It's just nice, isn't it? Having a chat with someone.
Yeah.
Quite a long pod, this, mind. Partly because we've been starved of any contact.
Yeah, I'll listen to this tomorrow. I've planned a little walk, a little bit of me time tomorrow, and I'm going to maybe go for a walk or something with my dogs, a slow one, because my big dog, Gus, is so old. It can take 40 minutes to get round the block, which is a 12-minute walk. But I'm going to listen to our pod, because I don't often listen to ours, because I already know what we say, but I'm also going to listen to Collecting Cars podcast, Tommy, which I'm very excited about.
Talking of dogs, I saw a lovely... French hound on my travels this morning, but I can't remember what it was. A French hound. It was from a certain area. I can't remember what the area was because I asked the lady. I said, "Look, that's a beautiful dog, ma'am. what breed is it?"
Wouldn't it be a Bouvier.
No, it began with P. I'm pretty sure, but it was lovely. It was a bit like a Weimar armour.
Yeah.
It was with the hound colours, you know, of the white and brown sort of.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
Pointer, not a pointer, no.
No, it was a French, anyway. It was a French hound. But anyway, there
French
we are.
French hound. All right, well, someone might tweet us. Anyway, you keep going, fella. What are you going to do this Arvo, boy?
I am going to do some weights now, and then I'm playing golf late this evening. So.
Oh, of course he is.
Yeah, yeah. Taking the Wolf of Penarth out, James Rainbird.
Oh, my God. Mm. Good luck. So, I'm cooking a picanha on the rotisserie, mate, and I'm going to, work on my stretching.
Yeah. All right. Put on Strava, all right?
Yeah, of course we will. Cheers, boy. Well done.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Bye.